Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials, where we help you accelerate your career and turn soft skills into hard money by mining gold from project failures, bringing insights from ecosystem experts, and inspiration from others on the trail. Now joining us with over 20 years in the ecosystem, please welcome our host, John Klein.
Welcome to another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. This is the John and Eric Show, and we're delighted to have you here with us. Welcome, Eric. Nice to see you.
Hey there. Good to see you, too. It's been a week or so. How's it been?
It's been great. Thank God. We got some rain down here in Southern California. Put out all the fires completely. Thank God.
Always good.
Had some good pickleball and good times with the kids. My first kid turned 18, so I'm sure many of you can appreciate that milestone. You'll be there in a few years.
Yes, just a few more.
Well, awesome. So let's jump into it here. I think with our people first minute here, I made a discovery that's been out for a little while, but I really appreciated. I've always thought about, you know, Trailhead doesn't have a ton of information related to soft skills. There's a little bit on business analysis. There's a little bit on strategy, you know, there's a little bit on, I think, some UX elements. I'll get into those conversations. Someone brought to my attention the admin skills kit, which I hadn't done an extensive. I remember seeing it a couple of years ago, but I really haven't looked at it extensively. So I spent some time reviewing it and found it to be really a great resource. And I wanted to highlight it for our listeners, especially because we have layoffs, of course, across a variety of different companies this week. And there's a lot of people looking for their great next opportunity. And what's cool about this skills kit is it not only highlights some of these intangible soft skills that are really valuable as it relates to being a business analyst or an admin, but it also provides this little area. You click on it, it brings up a little tile, and that tile brings you to additional resources, right? Like blog posts and videos, and even talks about if you were going to highlight this on your resume, here's some great copy that you could use to kind of start the process, maybe leverage AI or wordsmith it yourself to turn it into something really special for yourself to feature your value in that area. So I thought was a really neat resource.
I think this is maybe the fastest we've gotten to value in any of our podcasts for the listeners. I didn't know about this site either. And you brought it to my attention, and I'm looking at this just thinking like, oh, this is gold. It's gold from a framework perspective. Mm-hmm. Like somebody says, what should I know to be an admin? And like, so you might say, well, set up menu. And this is like, no, I mean, yes. And set up menu. And also, you know, you should be on top of always be learning, you know, you should, you got to pay attention to detail in the following ways. You got to have problem solving skills. And then the fact that you'll point out that we can actually take these individual items and construct a resume out of it to show that you're a more well-rounded admin, mm-hmm. I think is like, again, fastest time to value in a podcast.
Right?
Amazing.
Winning. Yes, you guys can all, you can move on. No, but we've got lots more for you. I think also
the show notes,
great.
I mean, how do people get to it?
Well, I'll put it in the show notes, but it's okay. You go to admin.salesforce.com/skills kit, all one word, SKILLSKIT. If you just look up admin skills kit on your favorite way to search, which some people use Google, some people use ChatGPT, right? Whatever you choose, use that. But I also think another element is if you've been an admin for a year or two and you're going to put something on a resume, typically you're thinking of, well, what should I include? And when I say resume, I'm mostly thinking LinkedIn. That's my perspective. And you can use LinkedIn. You can actually download a PDF of your LinkedIn profile and use it as a resume.
Nice.
So this becomes like a checklist to be like, oh, okay, great. Let me look at this list and see which one of those things do I feel like either had a major accomplishment, I had a breakthrough, I have a story or an anecdote that I feel like I contributed in my prior roles. It becomes like this little checklist of being like, yeah, did I do that? Did I do that well? Do I do that well? Do I do that well? And you can highlight where you should put your emphases. You know, and I use the rule of threes on that from Steve Jobs, which is you kind of pick your top three and then maybe have you know, more info off a link or something. So good stuff. I'm glad I was able to share that with you because you work at Salesforce. And so it's totally normal for people like us not to know that this is here.
No, you can't know everything. So, you know, thanks for bringing it to my attention. And I get people talking to me too. kids coming right out of college, and they're like, how do I get started? And you and I have talked about how people reach out to you and say, I already have my, admin cert, but I need to get my, I need more traction when I'm interviewing, stuff like that. It's applicable at the beginning of your career and midway through your career. And then if you're senior, I would say I'm senior, hey, you can help bring up other people by sharing this with them, and it's going to make everybody stronger. So it's great.
Awesome. So let's see. I think you had a note here on what does the word technical mean?
Yeah, so on my side, I work with different kinds of people at Salesforce. I'm on a team of technical architects on the sales team. We work with sales engineers, and we work with enterprise architects on the sales team. And then we work with our customers, and we were just talking about, technical presentations and maybe when to bring in somebody on my team of technical architects. And what I realize is, in talking with, one of the sales engineer managers, what I think is technical and what they think is technical are overlapping, but they're not the same definition. And I was thinking, I used to be a sales engineer, so I thought I understood someone else's perspective. And the takeaway is, there's room for miscommunication even within very nearby job positions. And so we were going back and forth over Slack or email or something. And I finally asked the question about, how would you define technical? And he shared something with me. And for me, his answer was, the function that we need to be explained was, I would scope it as a business requirement. Can a business user do X? I mean, sure, it's on the more technical end of what users do, meaning running reports or configuring some aspect of Salesforce, cadences and high velocity sales. So it's not an everyday thing. But then my reaction was, oh, well, for me, technical is like, are we talking a LWC, a Lightning Web Component, an integration? Are we talking mass loading of data duplication, like something that's under the covers of Salesforce setup menu? And I see his perspective, and now he sees my perspective, because I
Nice.
got to the right question. So we've talked in the past about how, it's not just important to know how to do the setup menu stuff. One of the skills that I didn't understand in the beginning when I was a consultant was the slower, methodical approach that the best consultants I worked with used to step through a process and make sure the process was well defined. And I was sitting on the side as a young programmer, just frustrated, because we seem to be taking little tiny steps. But I understand now, as somebody more senior in the role, by taking these little steps, we find all the little assumptions and areas for misunderstanding right up front, instead of leaping to conclusions, assuming we're on the same page, and then finding out a month later, oh, I thought you said technical. I did say technical, and then and having to deal with it later. So that was just an example I want to share with people from my life that I think is relevant to the skills beyond the setup menu.
I agree. And one who, who certainly tries to assist people in turning soft skills into hard money, I think it's a really good point. And in particular, I think the irony about using the word technical, because so often we think of language as a technical device, and it's not actually. It's subject to massive interpretation and kind of contextual difference that we think of words, even to the point of, I remember in my early years with software, working back when there were before there was WordPress, working on a browser-based content management system, when I would talk to people about, think about all of the components of a UI, right? Like buttons and select menus, pick lists, checkboxes, fields, or people would have entry boxes, and they'd have all these different words. And so if you didn't have like a picture, you're like, that thing, like whatever you call that thing, that's what I'm talking about. And essentially aligning to their language, right? I'll do the interpretation. Oh, what do you guys call that? Okay, great. A text box. Perfect. That's what
Let's
I'll
call
call
it
it.
that.
And I just use the word text box. And I'm not interested in conveying at this point what I know it's called. So it's funny because that's very true. And the more we can lean towards that alignment and being comfortable I think ironically, that's the sign of a seasoned professional, is
Oh.
somebody who checks their assumptions and validates their understanding along the way and
Yeah.
says, I'm not assuming I know this. What do you guys mean by that? What does
Yeah.
this phrase mean to you? What does that acronym mean to you? That to me shows great maturity. So it's a great point.
Yeah, it's great. I'm glad you like it too.
Yes. So talking about trends, why don't you start? We were just talking about this before the show, and you can continue your thoughts.
Yeah, my thought is, the motivation for this topic is how do people get their brand out there so people know what they are? And as, within a company or outside a company, if you're inside a company, ideally you're publishing your knowledge and your thought leadership or discoveries. And running it by people, run it by a smaller group of people and then a bigger group of people and polish it. And then once you're kind of sure about, having gotten a bunch of people's feedback, stick it out there. Stick it out there on a Slack channel where the SMEs hang out. Or if it's outside your company, publish it to your LinkedIn profile or publish it to, like, there's a sales engineer group called the Pre-Sales Collective that's always looking for people to present on what it is to be in pre-sales. So whatever your industry group is. And then I thought, oh, but you know why people don't do that? It's because they're not sure that what they know is interesting to other people. And that in my world, I learned about that condition being called the imposter syndrome. And I didn't know what it was. And I may have mentioned it before a year or two ago, maybe 3 years ago, but I'm gonna bring it up again because it's still amazing. And the idea is, so there's a quote basically that I came across in researching it is there, there are so many people who are who know great things, and we're all going through this learning journey to actually, whatever, every day we're encountering new things, we're figuring things out. We should share them with each other. But we all shut ourselves down because you feel like, eh, what I know is probably known by somebody else. And you do that because you're afraid you're going to feel shame when you find out that you shared something that somebody else already knew and it wasn't, you look like, you're not deserving of the position you're in. And the thing is, the difference between imposters, people who have imposter syndrome, and people who don't, is the people who don't have imposter syndrome are okay with sharing something and some people thought it was silly. There's a whole bunch of people who will have thought, oh, I had that question too. And they'll eat up whatever you put out there. And so I guess I want to point out, I did a bunch of some quick research on YouTube and TED Talk, and there's about five sites out there with videos on imposter syndrome, a tons of books on Amazon. And the idea is that just go read it, go find out about it. It's like an instant therapy. The next time you think, oh, nobody's really gonna, enjoy what I have to say, if you've bounced it off a few people and it was enlightening to them, put it out there because you're probably not the only one who was wondering about the problem you solved. And you can shortcut somebody else's project if they can see how you solved it. So don't give in to imposter syndrome.
Yeah, that's solid. And we all, have suffered from imposter syndrome and still do from time to time. To me, I
Totally.
think it's a natural and should be somewhat ironically welcome aspect of your life, because it means you're putting yourself in situations where you have to grow. You feel like you're swimming in water that's a little bit faster than you are used to. And so you have to learn new things and new ways to manage it.
I love that perspective of being open to it. I mean, my dad used to always say, hey, if you're skiing and you didn't fall down, you weren't trying hard enough.
Right?
I'm
Yeah.
not saying you should fall down, but if you've checked out a skiing analogy, if you've checked out a run and you see something doing over here and you figure out you can do that jump and then you teach somebody else to do it, like you don't teach everybody, but like there's you tried something new and you passed it on to somebody else.
Yeah, that's good. I like it. And I think ultimately the only people who can prove imposter syndrome, right? Like it prove it to yourself is you. Nobody can put you in a new environment that you don't have that, because that would be totally boring, right? You're the only one who can prove it to yourself, as you but you have to go through it.
You do.
That's good.
Anyway, eventually, I would say it's not a concern anymore. Like, once you've done it a bunch of times, you've done it three, four, five times, you put it out there, you'll get feedback. You'll say, one thing you'll get is, oh, you should check out this site. They actually have a similar take on what you're doing, but they do it differently. Okay, great. Now I know more.
Sure.
Nobody's going to do it exactly the way you suggested it. So, no matter what, I mean, it's highly unlikely.
And that's
So,
kind of good, right? Because that's your unique, fingerprint on the problem, which is why
right.
it's so valuable to have various people supporting it.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, thinking about what we're excited about.
Yeah.
So, I think I'll take this one first. So, I had a great trip to Architect Dreamin', the first event in the US, which was fun. So, when I was there, I learned that there was an event in France, there was an event in Germany. There was one, I think, maybe in Scandinavia somewhere, and just surrounded by about 80 or 90 just amazingly qualified. So you talk about, I guess we're senior, right? 20
Right.
plus years. I was surrounded by like almost everybody in the room was 15, 20 years. And just hearing the various things that they were chatting about, right? So Ian from Cloud Elements was there, and some key people from Gearset were there, and there were some great sponsors, and it was just such a wonderful environment. And this is for me. I've been really a little bit in the jet stream for like the past 10 years, just enjoying time with my kids, working, things are good, and so it's been really nice to do some reentry and go visit and stay for Cactus Forest afterwards in Arizona. It was a beautiful spot. I got to ride in a Waymo for the first time, driverless car. So if you look at the driving, if you look at the steering wheel and realize nobody's there, it like the anxiety never really goes away. But if you just look out the window, like it's just a Lyft driver, it's like no big deal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I've heard that. I mean, in September at Dreamforce this year, Marc Benioff said to people who were in attendance, like, while you're here, you gotta go try Waymo. There's a few moments we've had in our lives. First time we tried an iPhone, first time we got on the internet, whatever, what are your references? First time you ride, I mean, for me, Marc goes, first time you ride in a driverless car, that is a moment. And then you're saying the same thing.
Yeah, I was in the back with two other guys. So Adam, he's the technical architect from Google, and Kevin, he's I think from Belgium, but was born in Alabama. I don't know if you're hearing this, Kevin. Sorry if I got it wrong. But I was taking three other guys to go play pickleball, of course,
Course.
just south of Scottsdale. And we were essentially, three of us were together and one in the passenger seat in the front, right? So the whole car was full except for the driver, and we're just chatting. And yeah, it was definitely a unique moment. Everything went great. It was incredible.
Crazy. That's awesome.
So I think the other thing for me I'm excited about is we did get our first prototype of a Slack app, which is super fun. And we've experimented with different ways of doing it, which is really neat to see how flexible it is. We did one with middleware, and we did one without middleware that's basically serverless and stateless, which is pretty neat to think about a lightweight web services way of producing an app. And Slack has done a really great job of, just the ability to spin up the sandbox and to clearly convey the Trailhead trail is super easy as a starter, just to get you into kind of scopes and security and tokens and all that stuff. So that's really fun. So we're on our way of basically building the same app. We're going to do one route through Agentforce and then another route kind of through DIY. With the Assistant API, and just kind of highlight the differences, where the trade-offs are, what the benefits are with the Einstein Trust Layer and all that stuff, if we kind of are exchanging that data. But it's really all about creating a soft skills coach. So basically a people-first coach that people that can evaluate your calls, your like the different things that you're doing, maybe something you're about to write, maybe a situation you're about to step into, just ways to bring back to mind those important intangible soft skills that are going to help people, put on their cape and really excel in their careers. So it's been a fun way to kind of dovetail these things.
I think that's super cool. I really the Slack has really evolved. I mean, it had the developer documentation's always been practical enough for you to figure out how to create an app, but it was a pretty heavy lift about 2, 3 years ago to create an app. And I think it's cool that you're going both ways too, trying it through Agentforce and also just the non-Salesforce, standard, middleware way. And it's and once you get it once, I think that's kind of like a if you're a programmer building Slack
Kind of rinse
apps,
and repeat.
it's rinse and repeat, and you can take the same code base and then change what it's querying and where it goes. And the mystery is no longer there once you built your first Slack app. And the value of Slack is great for people communication, but the value of Slack is better once you start connecting it to systems. At Salesforce, my expense account approvals, I have a team of 10 people, they all come through Slack. If I want to see the 10 items that they're sending me for my expenses, I can click a button in Slack and it shows me a table of all the expenses. Or I could go into Concur, but I actually don't do that. For most expenses, I just go, I know what that is, approve, right from my phone. And we do all kinds of approvals right through
Yeah, it's nice.
Slack. So, but if somebody had to build it, in our case, our IT department had to build it. But I think it's getting easier and easier. With Agentforce and with the improvements in the Slack API. That's cool. That's awesome. So on my side, like what I'm excited about, I was at a team offsite for planning for next year, and somebody shared the two books that they thought were like some of their favorites, and I hadn't read either of them. One is called Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Have you read this book?
Yes, I love Lencioni. I love his narrative style. My other favorite book by him is called Getting Naked. You always search that with, book at the end, okay?
Right, exactly. That is a good lead. And also, it's basically a story of like, what does a team need to have to maximize its output? And it goes through this sort of Maslow's hierarchy of needs structure of at the foundation you need X, and on top of that you can do Y, and on top of that you can do Z. And there's about five layers. But like you said, it's a narrative approach. It's told through a story of a retreat of a bunch of an executive team from Silicon Valley going away for the weekend to Napa to hash out what they're going to do going forward, and about sort of the CEO, who's the all-knowing one, having built many teams before, she got brought in to fix this executive team. And it's intriguing. It's really an easy, inspiring way to take in a framework about what to look out for your team and how to make sure you complete the prerequisites before you ask for something irrational from them that really is going to be likely to fail unless you establish the foundation of a team first. So if you're ever working with as a consultant, you're working with your client, or you're working with your own boss and your own direct reports, having this framework, I've already used it like five times in my conversations at work for this coming year. Check out this book. It's a good one. Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Oh, it's great. And a couple highlights to give even more credibility to this is the presentation I gave at Architect Dreamin was called Architecting a Roadmap for Agentforce Acceptance and Adoption. Because most people are talking about, they start the conversation at ROI and they move forward into use cases, POCs, whatever, right? But most people, especially in America, most staff hide their use. They actually lie about their use of AI to their boss. And even though they use it internally, they have really big heels driven in as far as thinking about using it more in the business at large
Is that
because they
because the
think.
staff has been told it's not safe and they shouldn't use it? Or they want to look smart without telling their boss that they
I'm
are
sure it's
using
a combination. Yeah, I'm sure it's a
it?
security potential risk. It's very kind of bottom up, right? They're not getting approval. It might be the fact that I don't want to invest in my potential replacement, right? Because if people found out I'm just using AI for all of this, like why wouldn't they
Right.
just hire AI to do
Right.
it and not me? I'm sure there's
How
a
do you
lot.
feel threatened at all by your job getting replaced by AI?
Do I? No, not at all in general. I do think the lower level, like the more repetitive tasks, right? So when I was working regularly in a project as a business analyst, right? And I'm creating custom objects, I'm creating workflow rules or back, like let's say validation rules, or I'm creating a flow to do whatever. Those aspects that can be like very clearly defined, and have deterministic outcomes, I think AI will have a significant impact on
I think so
that.
too, but there's still going to be business analysts who need to know that they should tell an AI to do something.
Absolutely, right? And I
Jobs
agree.
still need to
And
be
yeah,
there.
intellect is not wisdom. Knowledge is not wisdom.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to have to figure out what we're not going to do, at what pace we're going to do it. How does it align with like the acumen and political will of the business? How could we incrementally stage it to meet up with the budget numbers? And I mean, there's so much there.
Yeah.
So
Okay,
there's
I took
no,
you down a tangent.
yes.
Okay,
So
come
no
back.
concern. But I think that there is a lot of concern for a lot of other people, you know, office managers and people that kind of manage data sets or they handle communications back and forth with people. I mean, I think there is a lot of concern.
Yeah.
So my point here is the you know, some of the aspects from this a book were actually incorporated into this because the whole process I walked people through was don't start at chapter two talking about ROI because people are
Right.
not on board. So if people are
Right.
not on board and you start talking about ROI and you are forcing them to go through this meeting, they'll just lie. Oh, nah, it's not worthless. Oh yeah, that's worth a lot. They're just gonna throw smoke and be like, oh, let's get through this or whatever, because I'm not on board and I don't want this to happen. And so I encourage them, let's go back to the introduction and have a high empathy approach and actually get people on board with why we need to think about this. What is the market telling us? What are customers watching or wanting? Because most
Yeah.
customers, the data shows that they want a response within 10 minutes, you
Mm-hmm.
know, and they want that 24/7, and they want personalization as they move across all channels. Like, this is hard to do. And now let's look at your competitors. Oh, your competitors are investing in this. So, first of all, let's just establish that me, as whether if I'm the Salesforce admin or I'm the manager or whatever, I'm not asking for this because I don't think you guys are doing a great job. I'm asking for this because this is what the market is demanding. And this is what our competitors are investing in. And if we're gonna move forward, we're gonna have to take that mountain, just like our competitors. And we want you to be with us when we do that. And are you willing to give some effort to do that with me? So that's the
So when you
first
say
thing is.
architecting, you're sort of like you're it's a positioning discussion that has to be had before we get into designing the use case
Correct. It's an
and
onboarding conversation, which in th Five Dysfunctions of a Team, you remember he says that we have to have the discussion so people can differ and commit.
Yeah.
You have to let people have the ownership,
Yeah.
recognize that they are listened to, that they are
Yeah.
heard, that
Yeah.
their considerations are
Heard.
considered. And
Yeah.
even if we come to a conclusion that says, I appreciate you sharing that, but we're
Yeah.
going to move forward anyway, they'll be like, okay, thank you for letting me share. I'm on board.
Yeah, I feel heard. Yeah, totally. That's so interesting to map it that way. I think it's totally valid. And I got to think about that so I can apply it in my job and pass it on. That's pretty good.
Well, I'll share it with you, and I've shared with others because I really appreciate it. You know, like Rob from Gearset highlighted that my session was one of the most meaningful of the entire event for him, and so I'm happy to share it with anybody. Just send me a note on social or otherwise. But part of it came from that book, and so I think
No
it's an
kidding.
incredible, incredible resource. And I hope there's a whole Five Dysfunctions kind of like suite of like sessions and workshops and all kinds of stuff that have come out of this book. So I think it's a great thing. So I
Cool.
appreciate you raising it.
No problem. Thank you.
So yeah, thinking about something that inspires us. And for me, you know, it's a little delayed, but 2 weeks ago, you know, these Hamas monsters released some more hostages. And what was amazing to me was hearing of these were the women hostages who were the observers, and hearing about their stories of surviving for 400 plus days. And this is, you know, these are Jewish hostages. And so they have responsibilities out in the wild related to Jewish holidays, observances, right? Like religious traditions and commitments. And to hear them thinking about, I'm in a tunnel and I only get a meal, you know, once a day, but I still want to not have leaven or chametz for Passover. How do I do that? Or, you know, I want to fast on Yom Kippur, even though I only get one meal a day, and the people I'm with can't stand the fact that, you know, I'm a Jew. And I was so inspired by their commitment in the midst of their difficulties to try and maintain some connection and fabric. And, thinking about Elie Wiesel's book, right, it probably inspired them to keep going every day in the midst
What
of
was
that
Elie Wiesel's
hell.
book?
He just talks about that it was, I think it's Elie Wiesel, or it might be actually Frankl, who highlighted that in search, it's Man's Search for Meaning, I believe, is the book. And he just highlighted that the people, you look at the people who perished in the concentration camps and the people who didn't, one of the common factors of the people who lived and survived were people who maintained their why, right? The people who had their why never lost their way. And to me, that is so inspiring. And this is just the latest example of these amazing women who came out of that treacherous, you can imagine how they're treated, right? But trying to maintain this connection and honor God in the midst of this absolute hell that they're going through, is it was just incredible to read about.
I haven't read that, but I'm picking up what you're talking about. And I'm not a philosopher. I'm not deeply religious. I call myself spiritual. I've met Mormons that were great people and Muslims that were great people and all kinds of religions, Buddhists, you bring it up, whatever it can be. The thing that I think is there's in times like those, I can only imagine it's helpful to have a framework to then to cling to, whether it's your why or your meaning or whatever, but to give yourself some the structure, a pursuit, a challenge, that as opposed to just being adrift, I think it'd be super helpful. So that's a good one. That's awesome. Those are some tough people.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, you asked me to come up with something that inspired me, and it sounds silly compared to what you just talked about, but it came up from when I was looking at imposter syndrome. What is, people talk about it, and there's quotes about people from people out there who have expressed their own concerns. Maya Angelou, super famous author, has doubts about, is her voice worth hearing, or and I found one here in, or Dr. Spock, who's a super famous author from maybe the 70s or 80s, but he wrote one of the first childhood rearing books on what you should and shouldn't do with a child. And like he was the expert. There were two Spocks in my life growing up. One was Spock from Star Trek, and the second one was Dr. Spock, who talked about raising children. And somehow, even though I was too young to read that, I heard about Dr. Spock when I was little. So the one that I'm thinking about is, so here, there are superstars today who are on stage who are masters of stage presence, master musicians, in this case, a pianist, vocalist, can do choreography. I'm talking about Lady Gaga here. But this was a quote I found that was relatable and interesting. And just going back to her thought was, I still sometimes feel like a loser kid in high school, and I have to pick myself up and tell myself that I am a superstar every morning so I can get through the day. Man, Lady Gaga has to go through that. This is such a relatable feeling that everybody has until you get to a point where, you either have a mantra like this that gets you through the moment, or you get to a point where you are confident enough in yourself, like Quincy Jones, famous music producer, or pick whoever's, or when Lady Gaga has to collaborate with somebody to do some joint song, her and Bruno Mars. What's it like when Bruno Mars and Lady Gaga get together and hash out a song? They released one in the past, 2 months, 3 months. That's like two people who used to be an alpha coming in a room together and having to figure out where they're complementary and where they're not, and one person knows more and one person doesn't. And maybe this is an old hat skill for most musicians when they get together. But to me, like, that's just, I love hearing that Lady Gaga too has concerns about imposter.
Yeah, to me it just seems like a very sobering, just a very sobering way to live, is that it's like some people would call it maybe lack of self-confidence or whatever, but I find that having that kind of sobriety where you're just, like I don't need to be overly confident about myself and just to think that whatever I say, somebody's interested in just because I'm saying it. I mean, I remember the data. I think about this often, from a lot of different vantage points. Like the but the people that have the highest self-esteem, I can look up the data on this, but one of the highest communities of self-esteem are death row inmates, which didn't make any sense to me. I find that's just fascinating. And so having someone like this who has their own self-doubts sometimes, I just think that's so healthy. Because one, it makes us work. It makes us do things excellently because we got to push ourselves to get beyond that and show ourselves that we are not imposters by demonstrating, not by
And I
declaring.
did read in my reading that it's typically people who are high achievers that have more doubts in this area. You're expecting that everybody else is a high achiever like you, or in the same domains as you. And that, I think, is where there's room for you to not feel like an imposter. Nobody knows exactly the things that you know. Like even at Salesforce here, like I can tell you, like I know a lot about integration and authentication and whatever. I've dabbled in all kinds of parts of Salesforce. But I just said today to one of my teammates, tell me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe XYZ products from our competitor does this. And I said, tell me literally, because I'm not used to people telling me I'm wrong. I really do want to know if I'm wrong. And he says, well, actually, they have something like it. They have a really simple version, and then they have an overkill version, but they don't have what we offer, which is this middle space. And I was like, great. I'm glad to know that now. I feel no part of me feeling bad about being wrong with me putting a stake in the ground, saying, is my stake in the right place in the ground? No, it's not. It should be over here. Glad I know. From now on, I'm going forward with that corrected information. But he was knowledgeable in a domain that I don't know anything about. So I don't feel bad
That's
about not
good. Well,
knowing.
and it's to your credit, right? That the ability to seek feedback and correction is, in my opinion, a sign of a great learner and leader, because ultimately we want to model that for everybody, because that's how we all get better. We all get better by letting someone come and present what they know that we don't, and then being applauded for it. Thank you for going through the effort, going down the rabbit trail, having to overcome all of the, because some of this information is not easy to find. We all know how hard it is to keep documentation up on an ever-moving platform. Salesforce does an exceptional job with it. Most people do not. So it often takes a lot of work, maybe some experimentation, maybe a POC. Who knows what they had to do to get the information that they brought to us,
It's a shortcut. It's great.
Well, one thing I was going to highlight was I'd like to start a new thing. We're going to post this for those of you listening. There is a LinkedIn page called Podcast Salesforce Trails and Trials. We would love for you to subscribe to that page, and we're going to use that page to get a little feedback. In the future, we're going to have a few contests, different things. So we might have some Ask Me Anything times. We want to really up the ante in making this a little bit more adventurous this year, especially as we think about people who are trying to get jobs, trying to grow their skills, trying to get more insight information. You have two people here who have been, around this block a few times, and we want to do whatever we can to support you and also keep you, entertained and with the variety show format that we have here. But please do that. And so I'll share the episode here, and I'd love for you to, the question we have is, we'd love to hear a time you overcame your dysfunction, just kidding, your imposter syndrome, and we'd love to congratulate you for it. So when we post it to the page, the episode, I'd love for you to leave a comment where you highlight how you overcame your imposter syndrome, and we want to celebrate with you and let everyone else learn from your experience. Also,
Great.
you can always leave us a message at 540 trial 75, 540 TRIAL 75. We'd love to hear from you and maybe include you on the show. All right. I think that's it, Eric. Anything else before we sign off?
That's it. Have a great week. We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Salesforce Trails and Trials. If you found this episode valuable, we would love your help reaching others. Please subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review and share this with another who would benefit.